You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
Last week, at a time when an increasing number of young people are absent from employment, education and training, the government announced plans to scrap a policy that gave university students one free year of study, known as fees free, with commitments to reallocate that funding to trades training. And an OECD report spelled bad weather for the New Zealand economy. To correct the course, they urged for reforms to increase the age of eligibility of superannuation all the way up to 72, among other policies. This was picked up by the National Party, who are campaigning on moving forward with their plans to raise the retirement age earlier to 67. So for our weekly catch-up with the Green Party, I spoke with MP Ricardo Menendez March about the scrapping of fees free and the raising of the eligibility age for superannuation. But as we called in, he was just leaving an extended sitting of Parliament to scrutinise Erica Stanford's Immigration Amendment Bill, and we began with a discussion on how he believes it will hurt vulnerable migrant communities. Well, kia ora, and welcome back to the show, Ricardo. How have you been this morning?
Been good. I've been scrutinising Erica Stanford's new immigration bill that will target undocumented migrants. So it's been a busy morning.
Let's start with that one. With this bill, there are 15 extra things they're trying to add to it. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And so the key thing here is that the government is pushing a narrative that overstayers are a big problem in the country. Overstayers are effectively what in other countries you could call like undocumented migrants. And one of the key issues that we have is that this is a very American approach of expanding the powers of immigration officials to ask for identification and removing a lot of the rights that migrants have to make things like appeals on humanitarian grounds. Part of the Trump-inspired attack on migrant communities to distract us from the inaction on the cost of living. And so we've been pushing against the bill and leading the charge on it in opposition.
Now, this seems to come at a time when ACT, New Zealand First, these minor parties are also campaigning upon tighter immigration controls and harsher enforcements in the coming election. Do you feel like this is speaking to a broader trend here within the New Zealand right?
It's definitely part of the trend that Trump has obviously led the charge globally and other countries are following. But the problem with it is that it's trying to turn people against their neighbours. It's trying to pit people against their migrant neighbors as opposed to the wealthy few at the top who are making humongous profits while these governments are telling everybody else that there's just no money to fix healthcare, no money to have decent public transport, no money to end poverty. While clearly there is that level of resources and it's easier to scapegoat migrant communities than actually look at the underlying systemic issues. This bill has no evidential basis for it. And my concern is that it will lead to the targeting of undocumented migrants of Pacific communities, something the government was warned about. And I think this is an extremely concerning trend that will cause harm to communities across the country.
Okay. Now, despite the critique of it, I want to quickly jump through some pros and cons of it that you've found sitting there. Have you found any part of the amendments that you felt were worthwhile in the face of stuff that you felt was not?
Look, there's some attempts to deal with issues around advertising fake jobs and whatnot and the Casey report, but like lumping things that literally strip people's rights away with a sprinkle of things that may be commendable does not justify the bill. We've received criticisms from lawyers, from advocates about how the bill altogether harms migrants. And I think if the minister genuinely wanted to tackle things like migrant exploitation, as she claims through this bill, she would not have cut the support that exploited migrants are able to receive through the migrant exploitation protection visa. So it's hard for me to, see the narrative in the minister's words of this being also about addressing exploitation when she has literally made life worse for exploited migrants.
Well, now for the cons. Would you like to just list them off?
Yeah, so the bill basically removes the ability for people on visitor visas to make humanitarian appeals. An example of that will be children who received the diagnosis of autism, who then could be in breach of the visa conditions while being in a visitor visa, and they wouldn't be able to challenge those policies on the basis that, sending a child home for an autism diagnosis may have humanitarian implications. The other one is around expanding the power of immigration officials to request ID should somebody be in breach of their visa conditions. This will lead to racialized targeting. As an example, we know that Americans are the third largest overstaying group in the country, yet you never hear stories of Americans getting stopped and asked information by our compliance team. What we do have is a history of Pacifica and South Asian migrants getting targeted. And we just apologize for the drone raids. It baffles me that after that, we've got a government trying to expand the powers of immigration officials to stop and potentially use detention powers if they do not, if they're not satisfied that the migrant is cooperating.
With the humanitarian side of that, with the autism diagnosis, did you say that that could become a problem on a visitor's visa?
Well, many children who are trying to fight, you know, to be able to stay are often end up in visitor visas. And so that would prevent them from being able to effectively make humanitarian appeals for them to be able to, you know, stay in the country. And the, I use specifically, you know, neurodivergent children as an example because this government, under this term, basically made it easier for neurodivergent children to be put in a position where they could face deportation or be denied visas. And now this will lead to more of those children being put in an extremely difficult situation. And, you know, I've been working with families in these situations for a few years now, literally visited one of them in Tauranga just last week. And I'm extremely concerned about the impact this will have on families and on people whose lives could be destroyed if they're denied those pathways.
Okay, we have a lot more to cover this morning, so we might have to move on.
Yeah.
But we can circle back to this if there's anything you want to leave us on at the end of the interview. Hmm. I want to move now to the scrapping of Freeze Free, the policy that enabled people to get 1 year free at university. This was introduced under the Ardern government and saw a change under this government to be on the final year of university. What are your thoughts?
Education should be treated as a public good. It should be free. Students should not have to get into debt to complete their degrees, nor should they have to struggle while they're studying. This is an affront to students, and I just simply do not buy the narrative that, you know, this wasn't affordable when the government was quite happy to give billions of dollars to mega landlords, to tobacco companies, and is happy to spend $1 billion on a LNG import terminal that will not actually lead to lower energy bills in the short to medium term. And so what this shows is that the government will punch down on the future of our students to be able to have lower student loans and therefore better opportunities after they finish their degree.
Do you believe that this was ever an adequate policy to begin with? It never made university free or necessarily affordable.
I don't think it was ever intended to be a silver bullet to address all the issues that students face, but it was a step in the right direction. We should be moving towards making education free. We should be addressing the fact that too many students are literally having to access emergency relief assistance, you know, in the form of food bank or other hardship support just to be able to complete their degrees. And this is hampering the future of young people in this country who many, and I say this as somebody who used to train social workers in my previous job, end up dropping out of their degrees or struggling their degrees because they're having to work multiple jobs to make ends meet. This policy should have been part of an expansion of making education the public good that it should be. And repealing it takes us back to, and you know, to a position where we're expecting students to get into debt and to struggle just to be able to actually train to help us build the future of our country.
On that, youth unemployment is also reaching a 10-year high. Let me get this straight. The total unemployment sits at 5.3%, but the proportion of people aged between 15 and 24 not in employment, education, or training is at a 10-year high at over 14%, and that's a rising figure. With the scrapping of fees free, how do these two things interplay?
Yeah, and this is part of the problem. If we circle back to the previous topic, you have politicians who want to pretend that it is migrants who are taking all the jobs from young people, and yet we've got a government that is not only burdening our students with more debt, but it's cutting graduate programs, it's cutting jobs in the construction sector by cancelling Kāinga Ora build programs, and is not actually planning the economy to be able to create good jobs all around, which is what the Green Party is fighting for with the Ministry of Green Work so that we can better plan our infrastructure. This is going to lead to young people burdened with debt after their education, having no job prospects here in Aotearoa. And for example, we've got so many nurses that were promised a job after the degree only to find themselves unemployed. And their only option will be to go to Australia for greener pastures. It shouldn't have to be this way. We should have a government that is creating jobs, not cutting them, and one that values education as a public good that it is.
They say that they're going to use some of this freed up funding and reallocate that towards trades and apprenticeships and those sorts of training. Do you feel like this mitigates some of this harm?
We'll have to see the details of what their supposed support for trades will look like. The Green Party has already supported campaigns like paid placements for people who are training to be nurses, social workers, and in other healthcare professions. And I do think that could be something that the government could explore to support our trades. But actually, ultimately, the key thing here is to actually focus on creating jobs, on restarting our state housing build program, and which will give opportunities to people who are in trades, and actually valuing vocational education for what it should be, not being seen as a sort of smaller sibling of university education. And so this is why I have very little faith that the government is serious about addressing youth unemployment, because they, if anything, have cut jobs in graduate programs as well.
All right. I think, again, we're running out of time, so let's move on to our final topic now. The National Party is saying that they will campaign upon raising the age of eligibility for superannuation. If they win the next election, they'd raise it potentially, it sounds like, to 67 and perhaps onwards. This was prompted by the OECD report that was not optimistic for New Zealand and suggested this as one of their policies. What was your reaction to this?
Well, let me make it clear, the Green Party will fight to keep superannuation at the age of 65. And the problem here is that we've got parties like the National Party who want people to work for longer, to work harder at a time where people are already having to work multiple jobs just to survive. People should not just have, you know, to make work basically all the rest of life. And this is why we think that the moves to increase the superannuation age are problematic. If we're concerned about the affordability of the scheme, we need to look at our tax system. And it's no surprise that the National Party would rather increase the superannuation age and steal people from people the ability to retire at 65 instead of taxing their wealthy mates, so that we can actually have a safety net system and the infrastructure we deserve and the jobs that we deserve, so that everyone can be well and retire at the age of 65 as they deserve and was promised to them through the current superannuation scheme.
If it is the case that an increasing number of Kiwis are older, I mean, it's about, is it 1 in 5 or 1 in 4 working age Kiwis are now supporting people on the superannuation, and eventually it seems like it will be 1 in 2. Every one Kiwi on the superannuation will be supported by 2 working Kiwis. That math seems hard to hold up for the long run. If that's going to be the case, then surely that would start eating into our other benefits, like working income or working for families. Or
well, if 1 in 2 people are over the age of 65, there will be less beneficiaries, therefore, as a proportion of the population, right? But the key thing here is that the answer to an aging population isn't to strip people over the age of 65 of the support that they deserve. If we are concerned about a bunch of rich superannuants claiming super, the answer is to tax them. If we're concerned about the fact that maybe there will be more older people out of work, we need to build a more productive economy and create good jobs that allows everyone to be well and build the homes that allow people to actually live through old age in them, so that we actually have a more cost-effective way of dealing with our aging population. Ultimately, none of these answers should be to strip people of the support that they deserve. And the National Party would rather do that than actually have a fair tax system where mega landlords, where billionaires pay their fair share. And this is why the Green Party is campaigning on this, so that the answer doesn't become just stripping the rug under people who deserve support and deserve to retire with a safety net.
Thinking about our previous conversation about trades and pushing people towards trades, do you feel like there is a bit of an irony here where one of the concerns with raising the age of retirement is that people who do physical labor just, they cannot work any longer than 65. 65 is even pushing it for a lot of people. If we're pushing people towards physical laborer jobs and apprenticeships, there seems to be a bit of a mismatch here between, you know, the long-term planning with education and then the long-term planning with superannuation.
That is absolutely an issue. And these are the very same politicians that call migrant workers doing that kind of work low-skilled. And that reflects on how they view locals as well. Ultimately, we know that there is a gap between different population groups in terms of, you know, how well they are when they reach 65. We know that, you know, along ethnic lines, Maori and Pacific people are likely to get 65 in poor health through no fault of their own and through just systemic discrimination. We know that people doing physical labor are likely to end up having to do this not because they want to, but because they need to after 65. And this is why people deserve to have the superannuation age remaining at 65. And if we're concerned about rich superannuants accessing it, the answer is to tax their wealth and to ensure that we're reinvesting that into creating good jobs for everybody else.
All right. Is there anything you want to leave us with today, Ricardo?
We don't have to see an Aotearoa where people are stripped of their support so that Christopher Luxon's wealthy mates keep getting effectively handouts and tax cuts. We can build an Aotearoa where everyone has enough to thrive and where there's good enough jobs and where the rich pay their fair share. And this is exactly what we're campaigning for. We won't accept the status quo that is being offered by both legacy parties. And this is why this is going to be a fight between retaining things as they are, with a few sprinkled changes in between, or bringing about real change, which is what the Green Party is fighting for.
All right. Thank you for joining me today, Ricardo.
Appreciate it. Take care.
Take care. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
That was the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez march on the Immigration Amendment Bill, the scrapping of fees free, and the potential raise in the retirement age to 67.
That was the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez march.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.